From the City of Angels, near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. First of all, congratulations to the World Series champs, Chicago Cubs. Defeating Cleveland, great series. Their first World Series since 1908. 108 years. Wow. Hello, by the way, to Danny Harris. He's listening right now at the base of Mount Everest. He's up 17,000 feet at a camp. And to Red Cross auction winner Douglas Bader and his son Rowan, they paid a lot of money to have dinner with me tonight. All went to the Red Cross. 12-year-old Rowan, by the way, is a website called theleagueofdogs.com. What a great mind that little kid has. Later tonight, open lines. Here's what's happening. The Iranian Revolutionary Guards, the country's elite military force, apparently is sending assets to infiltrate the United States and Europe at the direction of Iran's Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei. They will be in the U.S. and Europe very soon, they say. They are there to bolster Iran's regime and stop any potential plots against the Islamic Republic. A report into missing Malaysia Airlines flight MH370 by the Australian safety investigator leading the search supports its view that the aircraft descended rapidly after running out of fuel with no human intervention. Flight MH370 disappeared March 2014 on its way to Beijing from Kuala Lumpur with 239 passengers and crew aboard, one of the world's greatest aviation mysteries. Apparently, they say it was spiraling down out of control. The 2016 presidential race is, borrowing a phrase from Donald Trump, once again keeping America in suspense, with the polls and the electoral map being scrambled in the final days amid a slew of late-breaking developments. I mean, this is changing every day. Dr. John Curtis, of course, has been watching all this change. Can you keep up with it, John?
Well, you know, George, I mean, I'm writing as much as I can and, giving people, an analysis on this stuff on a daily basis. But I think, when Comey came out and reopened the investigation, Hillary's email, it was a complete game changer. And while, the Democrats and certainly the Hillary campaign have cried foul, I mean, it's pretty clear that the White House position are different from what the Democrats and Harry Reid and the rest are saying. That Comey committed some kind of protocol breach, and I believe that's what Attorney General Loretta Lynch said. I mean, the only protocol breach that's taken place is when she met with Bill Clinton, on the tarmac of the Sky Harbor Airport on the 28th of June, and then on the 3rd, as you know, that Comey decided not to charge her with violating laws related to classified information. But this development of Comey having the computer of Anthony Weiner and thousands of new emails is a very significant development, because what it really says is that the voters out there who pre-voted absentee really are now potentially voting for a criminal, for a someone who may be charged with a felony abuse of classified, government.
Oh, sure. And my sources tell me, John, that there's going to be some more big things coming out really soon. And we don't have that much time. The election's less than a week away now.
Well, and the question is, the Titanic is that, can Trump, where he had to thread a needle, has this really switched the momentum? And if you look at the polls, the aggregate polling right now shows her with an insignificant 1.7% lead. And what it's really indicating is this race is up for grabs right now.
You're right.
And the momentum is clearly with Trump at this point.
All right, John, get ready, because Election Day is next Tuesday. You'll be with us. We'll probably talk with you this week, though. The Federal Reserve avoided a November surprise today, opting to keep short-term interest rates on hold at the conclusion of its policy meeting. No increase. NASA has announced that it's seeking information regarding instruments that could be flown to the moon on future commercial spacecraft with one company that is developing a lander, offering financial support for that development as well. What else is going on in space? Let's get an update from our science advisor, Robert Zimmerman. Robert, what's going on these days?
Well, right now, George, in the last 24 hours, China is really becoming hot. They've got two guys up in their space station. They're about halfway through a 30-day mission. They announced yesterday a private company in China, if there's anything really private in China, announced they're going to build a reusable suborbital and orbital crafts for tourism by 2020. And tomorrow morning, they're going to launch their largest rocket they've ever had. It'll be the most powerful rocket available in the world, actually, if the launch tomorrow succeeds. And it's designed to launch the big modules that they're going to put up for their space station in 2020, as well as other major manned accomplishments. And they also announced today that the first launch of their SmallSat rocket will take place in December. And that's the opposite end of the scale. But it's interesting because this is a solid rocket fueled rocket that's launched from a mobile vehicle. So it's an ICBM because it can be orbital craft, which means it's some form of ballistic missile that goes from a vehicle. So not only will it get them commercial, they're going for commercial market, but they're also developing missile technology that would be very hard to track. China is hot right now when it comes to space, George, and they're going to be a major competitor over the next
year. Well, we better keep up with them, that's for sure. We were ahead of everybody, so let's make sure we stay that way. Robert, thanks so much. Would you like to be more successful? Try thinking about death according to a study. That's right. A study in a group of basketball players has found that they played better if they thought about death before taking to the court. The researchers say their findings indicate that thoughts of mortality could be used as a very powerful motivator, not just for sports, but for many different performance-related activities. In Indiana, a priest says the number of people requesting exorcisms is at an all-time high. Father Vincent Lampert is an exorcist priest based out of St. Malachi Parish. He was appointed to his role by bishops of the Catholic Church. A New York woman thought that she hit it big at a resort's World Casino slot machine until she was told that the nearly $43 million figure displayed was a technical glitch. She was offered a steak dinner instead of the money. Jeez. And the head of the University of New Mexico's Gallup campus is under fire tonight for spending money on Bigfoot-related pursuits. The executive director, Dr. Christopher Dyer, organized a two-day on-campus Bigfoot conference, followed by a Bigfoot expedition costing taxpayers more than $7,000. The university didn't like that. Up next, the New World Order, a strategy of imperialism. Sean Stone joins me next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I had the pleasure last month of meeting Sean Stone, an author, actor, filmmaker, at the Oswald Conference in New Orleans, where everybody talked about the possibility that Lee Harvey Oswald was merely what he said he was, a patsy. Sean's book is called New World Order, a strategy of imperialism. His film was Greystone Park. Some of his TV programs he's been on include Conspiracy Theory with Jesse Ventura. You all know Jesse as well. And Sean, of course, has been an editorial consultant. He has released his first feature film, as I mentioned, Greystone Park. That was several years ago. And he happens to be the son of director Oliver Stone. And Sean, he's a pretty good director, isn't he?
He's won a few Academy Awards. So.
He sure has. he sure has. But it was great meeting you at the Oswald Conference. That was a great conference.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Great conference. How long have you been interested in the New World Order in areas like that?
Well, to be honest with you, I've actually been interested in the New World Order since before I knew what the concept meant.
Really?
It's a strange story, actually, but when I was 13, actually, I've been writing scripts since I was basically 7-8 years old.
It's genetic. It's genetic.
Yeah, I mean, I always loved writing, since basically when I was a kid, I wanted to be either a baseball player or a writer, or both, actually, frankly. It's like I can write in my free time and play baseball. You know, at that time, I was still had dreams of being a baseball player. I gave that up after 12 and focused more on the writing side, probably wisely, because right now I'd be an old man in the majors, right? At 31, but I'd be way past my, I'd be at like the, either my peak or, you know, over.
That's
the,
right.
So I started focusing on writing at that age, and obviously going to school as well, but I loved writing in my free time. So I was 13, and I started having like sort of a vision of a story, and I wrote this script out, but it was about basically I saw like this, the map transformed, America's map, the flag transformed. It was America's flag was transformed into this new flag that had a globe that was like, you know, one unified globe under UN auspices, and the idea was that they were using this, they were basically using the idea of de-escalating nuclear weapons and trying to take away all the nuclear weapons of the planet and in a move towards one world government. And ultimately, the devil was behind this strategy because he secreted, he stole away using this Blackwater type of group. This is years before Blackwater. It was called Black Eagles. This group that basically stole away one nuclear warhead and ultimately was going to be the doomsday device once they had disarmed all the powers and collated them under one authority, and then they turned all the other countries against America, essentially. So it was a very apocalyptic, you know, Book of Revelations type of script. And I didn't have a religious upbringing per se, so it really wasn't informed by that. It was really just informed by these visions. And then, you know, this is when I'm 13, so when I'm 16, 17, starting to read books about the New World Order and the idea of this Luciferian conspiracy, a lot of it was like bizarre because it clicked into the things that I had imagined when I was younger. So that was, I guess, my introduction or interest in New World Order, and then having going from there into my interests in reading books like David Icke's books, mm-hmm. like Jim Marr's books, Rule by Secrecy, things like this. And you start to realize, there are secret societies, and there are, you know, these orders that do seem to have an interest in one world government, and confirming just things that I imagined and supposed.
And Chuck, what was really called conspiracy theories just even a few years ago, a lot of people are beginning to realize they might not be theories at all. They could be the real deal. People like you, Alex Jones, myself to some respect, people are beginning to say these guys are right.
Well, especially with Trump out there, because he's trumpeting all of the stuff that's coming off.
That's right.
The websites. What's that report? The one that Alex Jones is oftentimes on, the one who was going after Clinton, the online report. I'm blanking on his name.
There's Radar. That's one. InfoWars.
Anyway, I'm blanking on that.
That's okay. We'll get it.
But yeah, so the point is that Trump does seem to be absorbing a lot of this conspiracy material, and that goes back to his birther charges, frankly. Right? I mean, this comes from the conspiracy community.
That's right. That's right. Why are people beginning to shift and beginning to say, you know, these people might be right? They're accurate. They're telling the truth. Why is it changing?
Maybe it's 2012. I mean, there is something to be supposed about this notion that 2012 was, as they say, never an end of the world. It was an end of the age, or it's some kind of demarcation point by which we entered a shift in consciousness, right? So if you take that, whether or not it's the actual 21st of December or not, it was 2012 to me was sort of a singularity in a sense, because coming into it, frankly, I started waking up more and more coming into that time period. The 3 years before is when I had tremendous amounts of paranormal and sort of initiation experiences, I suppose you'd say, to the extra-dimensional relation, you know, extra-dimensional or interdimensional reality mm-hmm. that we live in. So I would say 2012 to me is like a great barrier. And then people thought it was going to happen overnight. You're just going to shift, and one day, you know, you're going to go from being asleep to they live. You're going to put the glasses on and see all reptilians walking around. It didn't happen that quickly. But there was something to that, I believe. There was this shifting in consciousness, and it's ongoing, and I think it's only an increase. And that's why you also, you know, the nature of internet and access to not only hackers, but just information coming through the internet has tremendously increased. Let's be honest. When a lot of guys, you mentioned Alex Jones, yourself, many people like, you know, the Bill Coopers of the world and
Right.
others, dozens of them, right, more, have been circulating literature, have been putting out books and videotapes, Jordan Maxwell, right, putting out like tapes people had to order from their, you know, local, not local, but you know, have to call like 1-800 numbers and get those VHS tapes shipped to you. And this is, you know, even before VHS, there was the newsletters. So that's how information was communicated, because the mainstream media was cutting us off completely from access to truth. You couldn't know about the
As they
Manson
still
scandal.
try to do.
Oh, sure, they still will. That's as much as possible. They'll either obfuscate if the story breaks. They'll just distract you from the meat of it. They'll say like, you know, WikiLeaks breaks or hacks are coming out, and they won't tell you what's in the hack. They'll just tell you the Russians are behind it, right? I mean, this is just a classic ploy of distracting you from the actual, you know, substance to look at the, you know, the unnecessary. Okay, yes, there might be some interest to it, but it's really superfluous to this story because the story isn't what's being revealed, not saying who's behind it. So when it comes to this, you know, these newsletters and these conspiracy lore and literature, this was all circulated by people who were, some of them very adamant, some of them looking to make money, absolutely. And there's a lot of
Sure.
people in the conspiracy community that I think are full of it, and they're just only interested in profit, not in truth. But the point is that when the internet came out, and it really it hit a peak with YouTube and these kind of channels from 2006, 7 forward, it made it much more rapid and easily accessible. So then by 2010, 2011, 2012, everyone was talking about the Illuminati. And
And the
it's only
podcasting
because of
has
the
helped
internet.
too.
The internet was allows you to do that.
And it seems to be getting bigger and bigger and bigger these days. And as you mentioned, Trump, it's had a tremendous effect on what is the strangest presidential election, Sean, I can remember. I mean,
Really?
it is just weird. And I still don't know what's going to happen Tuesday. I can't predict.
Right. It could go either way. I mean, there's definitely look. To me, I say every election is it's a selection process first and foremost. You have to know that you've been given two choices that have been selected. And I think there is this fantasy that Trump is sort of some sort of outsider. He's like the first billionaire outside of ever I've ever seen.
Oh yeah.
And I don't think he's really a billionaire, frankly. But I think
Yeah, we need to get those papers.
he definitely pretends to be a billionaire. I don't think he's actually a billionaire. But the point is that I don't trust Trump per se. I like some of the things he says, but the same thing you know, you could say about anyone from Obama to Bush, you know, to Clinton. You know, you liked a lot of the things they said coming into office. Let's be honest. Did they actually live up to it, or did they follow the New World Order agenda? And I would say that they all followed the ultimate agenda, which is, you know, we'll get into that later. But the question is, who is behind Trump? And there is
That's
this,
right.
you know, how do you say, in terms of even the attacks on Clinton, the idea that it's only coming from Russia and Assange, I think that would be a misunderstanding. There's definitely elements within the military. There are definitely white hats who don't want to see her in. But I think the white hats would also be equally suspicious of Trump and his agenda. And it makes you wonder if there isn't like a deeper game, which is usually having to do with the Jesuits, the, you know, the Rothschild elements, the, you know, the high level Masons,
Which are
the secret societies.
deep,
Yeah,
deep
that's usually
elitists.
where a lot of these strings are pulled. I mean, it's going to come from the deep, you know, the deep CIA elements. It's not going to come from, you know, actual, how do you say, like people actually being saying, yeah, we really like Trump because he's a good guy. I mean, look, the KKK is endorsing this guy. That's scary.
When you do your works, whether it's your books or your films, or whether you're in a movie yourself, do people look at you as a conspiracy theorist now?
Probably. I mean, I don't know. I mean, my father has been branded a conspiracy theorist since 91.
Yeah.
So why should I?
Be any
I guess
different?
I basically never shied away from it. I basically embraced the term because I said, look, when you study and you understand that reality is based in theory, science is based in theory, history is based in theory. You know, great historians have said the future is only a little bit more uncertain in the past. So historians even acknowledge the fact that the past is completely, it should be debated, should not be told and dictated as this is the truth. And any real historian will tell you, we don't know. We can speculate, we can draw a theory. So I hate the fact that people try to lay claim to their theory as the truth and try to tell you it's a law, because in science, there are very few laws in the universe.
Sean, stay with us. We're going to hit the break. We're going to come right back in a moment. Sean Stone, he'll be with us next hour. We'll take phone calls as well. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And we're going to come back in just a moment with Sean Stone as we talk about the conspiracies of the world and his views. Author, actor, filmmaker as well. And welcome back to Coast, Sean Stone with us. Sean, your new documentary is out, Century of War, and it's so poignant these days over what has been going on in this country for so long. Tell me a little bit about this and how you decided to focus in on what has been happening to America over
right.
these 100 years.
So the documentary actually airs on RT, our show Watching the Hawks, which I co-host. It'll be airing the week of the 14th, so basically, and what is it, like 10 days?
Yeah, right after the election.
Exactly, which is the whole point, you know, was this documentary was inspired from my time when I was studying at Princeton. I was obviously interested by history. That was my major. I'd done the thesis on New World Order that became this book. And at the same time, you know, you're seeing from just traveling from Princeton by train to New York, the devastation to our cities, our infrastructure, our industrial collapse, right? Rust Belt, the former industrial hub of the North, well, not just Northeast, but, you know, Northwest, and also Northeast, New Jersey and New York used to be industrial manufacturing hubs. So you would see these cities just falling into decay and ruin, and the idea, you know, the economists would always say, you know, parrot this idea, well, it's okay, we lost 100,000 manufacturing jobs. We got 100,000 service sector jobs to replace them. And, you know, I worked, coming out of college, I worked construction. You know, got very lucky to get a, you know, construction job and see what union pay is like. And that's amazing. I mean, you get basically three times what a service job
oh, sure.
would pay. So you say, okay, well, how can you compare a service job that's going to pay one-third of that wage with a union job, that we've lost all these union jobs? Well, you replace it with debt by putting people on credit cards. And so, I mean, this is one thing I was really interested by was the financialization of our economy, how the banks have basically taken over and strangled our, you know, our system as far as people being put into deep debt. We saw that with the crash, with the mortgages, the fact that most people don't own their own homes. We saw it with, we see it now with student debts. Most people know it just from their own experience, right? Most people live in debt. They're never going to get out of debt. We call it debt slavery for a reason. It's a form of slavery. And that's, you know, that's a very real thing. The statistic is that we have declined in real wages since 1970. So at a time in 1970 when one man could afford to make a living and take care of a family of four, now we need both parents working full-time, sometimes double jobs, right?
Just to get by.
Just to get by. So it's a tremendous, you know, it's just a tremendous collapse. And then, you know, I was always interested by this book by William Engdahl, great book called Century of War.
Yeah.
And he's also a Princeton graduate and a very generous, intelligent man, done some great research over the years, written great books. But I loved this book because it got into this petrodollar economy and how oil and this relationship to resource wars has driven a lot of our conflict since, really not, I mean, going back to World War One, because remember that's when the British got into the Middle East, the British and the French redrew the borders, oftentimes around oil, accessing oil.
And all about money, Sean. All about
well, money. That was the whole point, was actually turning black gold, I'm sorry, turning oil into the new black gold.
Mm-hmm. Right?
So
that's right.
It was gold that was backing the dollar, and now it's basically oil backing the dollar. So this was a major aspect of this documentary that I'm looking at, the system of petrodollar economics, collapse, financialization of our system, collapse of industry means collapse of infrastructure, and the fact that we're militarized around expanding our, you know, expanding our reach to access oil and other resources, but we're not putting our money into peacetime industries, right? We stopped basically post New Deal era.
Isn't this going to catch up with us eventually, if it hasn't already?
It's catching up already. That's why Trump's slogan is very appealing. Make America Great Again. It appeals to people because they've seen their decline in wages. They've seen the infrastructure and industries shipped abroad, infrastructure collapsing. They want to see America reinvested in, become a great country again, as it should be. But we're driven by this imperial mentality, and it's really a British mentality. And that's what. So the book and the documentary almost go hand in hand, hand in glove, you could say, because the book is the New World Order about the Anglo-American imperialism, the mm-hmm. British Empire that absorbed America into its strategy and basically has been working its way through the political economic system. Meanwhile, it's really hurt the middle class, working class, traditional American economy. So that's what we look at with the Century of War and the consequence of this imperial thrust. And then the documentary also gets into some of the future prospects, saying, look, we don't have to be pessimistic about the future. We can transform our approach to resources, because you read certain authors and certain intellectuals and scientists, and they say, look, the mind is the infinite resource. We create resources using ingenuity and technology, right? So we don't have to be beholden to limited resources and natural resources. We can actually, you know, devise, obviously, with energy, we can devise new techniques. We know fission, nuclear fission is possible. We know, obviously, solar and wind, but also going beyond that to things like fusion, both hot and cold, and then from there going off into more advanced forms of energy, but at least mastering the atom, being able to then use like plasma torches and things like this to basically have closer to full recycling processes. We also discuss like investing in infrastructure, things like high-speed rail, things that you would see in China, for example, things that rail systems like you see in Europe. You know, why don't we see that same level of investment in our infrastructure here? Rail systems would make sense for most travel. Because obviously not from LA to New York, but from, you know, within the northeastern region and all the way, you know, through to rebuild those destroyed cities like the Baltimores and Detroit's and Cleveland's and cities like this, you need high speed rail, but you can also retool your auto sector
right, to
build that high speed rail system, right, and employ people gainfully and then help markets.
It just sounds like common sense.
Oh, it is common sense. And stop outsourcing your work to China and Mexico and places. You know, put tariffs up. Stop feeding the international
cartels.
You know, what's called, you know, the internet, what's it called? The global corporations. They have no allegiance to America. So why treat them as American companies? Why do we feel that we have to get corporations that have to be so large and so big to be efficient? That doesn't make sense to me, because then you have huge supply lines. You have to ship things around the world. You have to ship fruit around the world rather than providing food from local farmers, rather than manufacturing and building things from more local cities and communities. Like, why is it that we feel we have to get so feel beholden to such large international corporations that they have to have the power in the world? I don't understand this concept. What happened to middle-class businesses? What happened to the idea of having small and mid-sized businesses in cities that can provide for people? I mean, you can have partnership with foreign companies. You can have partnership for things that you can't produce domestically. Sure, there are certain things we can't grow here. When it comes to science, technology, manufacturing, most of that can be done here. It can be done in any city, really. So I just don't understand this whole notion of, like, you know, a few corporations, as we know from these studies, that the Swedish did, for example, a few corporations, holding companies, about 100 of them, basically have the majority of the world's economy, as far as assets are concerned, within their holdings.
All hidden away and tucked away. I go back and forth between L.A. and St. Louis a lot, Sean, and in St. Louis, it's sad to see the empty manufacturing plants out there that were once, you know, hustling and bustling, and, you know, we were making things, and now they're, you know, tumbleweed blows by them. It's unbelievable.
And even if you have people saying, look, we want to work in the service economy, sure, but raise the minimum wage. I mean, the minimum wage is lower in terms of, if you account for the inflation, which no one wants to admit is real. I mean, it's insane to me that you can't factor the, you know, the cost of energy and medicine and food and say that there's actual inflation going on, because they keep masking it with your access to credit or debt, really, right? So it's a debt-driven economy where they replace your wages with credit cards and make you feel like, hey, I have power to consume.
How did you like interviewing one of our favorites, Catherine Austin Fitz, for Century of War?
Catherine was great.
Yeah, she's
really
so
great,
nice.
Full of so many insights. And the fun part, I mean, honestly, some of the best stuff I'd love to get into more with her, I couldn't get into for the, you know, for the logic and the science of the documentary. But when she started getting into the secret space program and the black budget, I mean, she's
it's
tremendous.
Amazing.
It gets speculative at that point because we don't know where it's going. But her, you know, basically, you know, her take is that $40 trillion has been siphoned off through the various, you know, missing Pentagon budgets. They admit this year $6 trillion missing from the Pentagon accounting books. I mean, $6 trillion, geez, really? That's tremendous. So that's just the Pentagon. So imagine how many trillions have gone missing, you know, from various government departments into, like, for example, you know, the bailouts, things like this. And then you factor in the interest and, you know, the interest on these, on the missing money. And she speculates that $40 trillion has gone missing. And she's like, well, that $40 trillion has been going towards what? Probably towards some kind of breakaway civilization, some type, you know, what the elites are running, which is underground facilities, which is, you know, off-world space programs. You know, it really brings into the question the alien agenda. Who's, you know, are there aliens on this planet that are really, you know, integrally tied into our most advanced technologies? When the, you know, people from RAND say that their tech is 40 years ahead of what is given to the public.
Well, since you bring that up, I'd love to get your take on that. Do you think we've been visited by ETs?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you ask me, humans are the progeny of ETs.
Yes, I believe that, too. The old Zachariah Sitchin theory of the Anunnaki genetically altering whatever was on this planet at the time, and here we are.
Well, I think it's been done multiple times. I think Sitchin's take, sure, it's accurate towards what the Sumerians were getting at. Not just the Sumerians, the Egyptians. You know, come on. The Jews took most of their literature from the Sumerians and the Egyptians.
Mm-hmm.
They had understandable's obsession with the Bible. It's like the Sumerians are talking about the same thing, but the floods and Anki and Enlil vying for power and, you know, choosing sides basically in this war over humanity. But I think a lot of that's symbolic. I do think that there have been multiple visitations. I think there are multiple, you know, probably over 50 or 60 alien races, either currently here, who have been here, who have tampered, who play different roles. The strange thing to me is just how physical they are, because I think on the interdimensional level, you can experience them if you do ayahuasca.
Right.
That much, you know, if you want to go there and do ayahuasca a couple times and see what kind of alien beings you encounter. But beyond the interdimensional wave, let's say, like beyond our 3D reality, which are physically here, that's harder to understand.
Ayahuasca will take you to a different planet. You don't even have to get in a craft.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the whole question with the craft. I mean, too many pilots are, you know, that I personally know that have come out testifying, have seen alien, or not alien, just UFO craft coming out of the ocean, flying at night. Almost any pilot you talk to, if they're honest, is going to tell you they've seen or experienced something bizarre with UFOs. So you got to wonder, is that just advanced government craft, or is it advanced government craft that's been re-engineered or back-engineered from alien tech, or is it actual constant alien traffic going on because we are like Men in Black in international or intergalactic space?
When you put together A Century of War, was there anything that you came across that you didn't know before that just shocked you?
Honestly, I don't think it was so much my realizations that really shocked me. No, I think I was pretty aware of the situation, the decimation of our inner cities, the creation of the drug economy to basically replace our industrial economy. I think what's really interesting with this documentary, people will find interesting, is the cold fusion aspect, because so many people dismissed cold fusion in '89. They thought it was dead. We go to Berlin Energy, which is based in Berkeley, and talk to SRI, Stanford Research Institute scientists, who tell you this is very real, and It's capable of providing power for people's homes.
Cheap, too.
And it's going to make it exactly, it's going to take it off the grid, but it's hard because it's a breakthrough technology. It's going to be very hard to displace the big boys, you know, the big oil, natural gas giants, the ones who want to, you know, do this Dakota Access Pipeline, the ones that want to, you know, frack and continue to exploit limited resources. I mean, let's be honest, oil, we don't know how long it's going to last, but at the end of the day, it's more controllable than if you are able to convert water, like ocean water, for a fusion process. Man, how are you gonna make money off that? Like J.P. Morgan said, how can I regulate that? And once I sell the device, it doesn't give me as much ability to constantly put a meter on it like you can at a gas station. So I think this is a tremendous breakthrough tech that people are going to be fascinated by when they watch the documentary.
Sean, back in 1991, your father came out with an incredible movie called JFK, and we are coming up now on the 53rd anniversary of that tragedy. We lost something in this country when he was killed. You, of course, have admired him for some time. As a matter of fact, that might have been part of the impetus of putting together A Century of War. Mm-hmm. Will we ever get to the bottom of this? I mean, we were out there in New Orleans talking about Oswald and his involvement or not. But, you know, everybody had their own views and their own theories. But will we really ever get an official explanation of what happened that day?
Well, I wouldn't count on an official explanation any more than you'll get disclosure of the UFO contact from the U.S. government, right? I mean, people around Bill Clinton and Podesta and Hillary have been saying for years they want to disclose the UFO, you know, UFO encounters with you know, with us, and even JFK apparently had said similar things. Well, I don't know if you'll ever see that from the government itself. I think that at this point, there's enough out there that, you know, evidence, you know, again, even going back to the original first-hand accounts and just your own reason, human reason, to speculate and have a create a theory that would, you know, be a logical theory that Kennedy was assassinated for political reasons. If we'll ever get an actual clarity of who actually sat down and decided, you know, we're going to do this hit, or we're going to do it with this person. If there's ever going to be a clarity of the exact timeline of that discussion, of those discussions, of who was in charge of the operation, of, you know, what the ultimate motivation was, whether it was Vietnam, whether it was him moving away from the Federal Reserve and the gold standard.
Or played around with the mob. That may have backfired on him, too.
Well, the mob... Absolutely. Well, look, the mob element, sure, they were pissed at Joe, his dad. Absolutely, because
yes,
he was a...
And Robert, because Robert went after them.
Well, my point, though, was that Joe basically was supposed to put a leash on the boys, you know, and not let them go after the mafia.
And he did not.
So, but again, the mafia being able to get rid of a president, no, I don't think they have that power. I think that they ultimately, you know, they had money, but they didn't have the political power to pull that off.
Hey, Sean, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. Final hour to go. We're going to take some phone calls with you. I want to talk a little bit more about your career as well. Sean Stone with us this hour. Phone lines are open as we talk about the new world order.